Hi, Crossroads. How are we today? Are we doing good? Good to see you. It's great to be with you, and we welcome those of you who are joining us online and those in our North Campus. And I had an incredible time last weekend, got to attend church in the North Campus, and what a wonderful group of people that wake up. Some wake up very early in the morning, and actually, can you imagine taking an entire church, unpacking it, putting it up, setting it up, doing a church service, and then packing it back up and putting everything back the way it was. And so, so grateful for the 50-plus volunteers that do that every week. And so thank you. And then also, this past week, I'm excited to tell you, we started our Celebrate Recovery ministry, and we had 67 guests for the first week of Celebrate Recovery. And here's the best part. We had one salvation. Somebody gave their life to the Lord this week. And so, yay, what an incredible event to take place. And so that is Thursday nights. And I want to say thank you because dozens of you have said yes. You've said, you know what, I don't know what to do there, but you said yes to being part of the cooking crew. And we've had over 40 people say yes to the cooking crew. Some of you have said yes to being hosts and helping out in different ways. So thank you for doing what you're doing with that. Today, what we're going to do is this. Take a look at the person who's sitting beside you, and I hope you picked your seat wisely because you're going to talk to that person a little bit. And so if you want, now's a good time to move. If you're married to that person, a set of marital advice, probably you shouldn't move. Okay, so if you're like going, I'd like to move, but I can't because of who I'm next to, you just might want to stick around. There's a fellow by the name of Francis Chan. He's a pastor. He's an author of a book. And recently I read this quote from Francis Chan that said this. It said, our greatest fear should not be of failure, but of succeeding at things in life that don't really matter. Think about that. Think about your life and the things that occupy your space in your mind and the things that occupy your time, and think about over the course of eternity, how much time and thinking do you spend doing things that in the course of eternity don't matter? And as I read this quote, I got to thinking, man, this is so true for so many of us because there are things that we look at, that we think about, that we think, man, these are things that matter and they worry us, they think about us. Maybe you've had somebody put expectation on you. And so you have this expectation from a spouse or from a parent or from a child or somebody around you or your boss. And you worry more about trying to meet their expectations. And in the end, their expectations don't really matter. Maybe you spend time watching television. Maybe for you, there's some bitterness in your heart, and you just let that root of bitterness continue to grow inside of you. And the truth is, it consumes your thought. It consumes your life. You're so frustrated and angry with the things that somebody or somewhere along the way that they did to you, and it consumes everything in your world. But the truth of the matter is this, it doesn't matter. Maybe for you, you think about getting even with somebody because they told on you or you did something and they stabbed you in the back. Maybe for you, the idea is that you think a lot about how you look and trying to look better. Maybe for you, it's a technology obsession. All you think about is getting the next iPhone or trying to be as trendy as you possibly can. Maybe for you, the fear of failure is one of your greatest fears. I think that for a lot of us, there are things that we spend so much of our time thinking about, pondering, that in the end of life, they really don't matter. And so today, what I want to do is I want to talk about some biblical truth of what matters and the reality of understanding that all people matter to God. So turn to your neighbor and say, all people matter to God. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a little interactive moment here because I would venture to say that, like me, almost all of you in the room probably as a kid had some kind of a nickname that somebody gave you. In some cases, it's a nickname that was a good one, right? You're like, okay, good, and you kept that nickname through life. In other cases, you're glad those people have either dead or gone and have that nickname no more, right? So here's what I want you to do. Turn to your neighbor and tell them the nickname that you had as a kid. If you remember somebody calling you something, tell them what the nickname was as a kid. Just let them know. Okay. Oh, now here's a show of hands. Tell me if that nickname is true to who you are today, then raise your hand right now. So if they gave you that nickname, you remember it, you go, yeah, that's me, that's me, okay. Now, show of hands, how many of you is that nickname not true to who you are today? Just show of hands, okay, okay. As a kid, I had a nickname, and I was part of a drum line, and the percussion group that I was working with in high school came up with this name because it's kind of creative for them. And so they came up with this name in which they called me Punkin Duncan, right? And so, yeah, that's just, and so I'm round, but I'm not orange. And so it was kind of a weird thing. And so through high school, I had this. And so even every once in a while, somebody from my high school will show up at church here. And if they come in and they're like, hey, Chris, it's good to see you. Or if they walk up and go, Pumpkin, then we're like, you know what? There's a church down the street that you probably ought to attend. And so we share them other places. But you know, all of us, I think, we're given some kind of a name. And some of us, we're given that name and we're just not real excited about it. Others of us, we're given a name. We're like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And I'm still getting called that today. But then on the flip side of that, some of us were given not just a name, but you were labeled something while you were a kid. You were labeled something like, you are to this, or you were born in this family, or you did a mistake, and so you were labeled because of the mistake that you were. And some of us could go back, and I'm not going to have you share this with your neighbor because I recognize how personal it is, but probably every single one of us, somewhere in the course of our life, somebody put a label on us, and that label has continued to haunt us, that label has continued to stay with us, that label continues to be there, and it's a frustration to us. And that label more than likely did not point to the fact that you matter to God. It was something that just was demeaning to you. It was demeaning to your family. It was demeaning to the people around you. And so today what I want to do is I want to unpack this understanding of what does it look like that all people matter to God. And if you've got a Bible app or if you've got the program or you brought your book with you, here's what I want you to do. I'd like for you, if you have your book, to write this word down to the left-hand column of your book, A-L-L. And what we're going to do is I'm going to talk today about three things to remember and realizing that all people matter to God. I'm going to give you three things, and I'm going to use the acrostic ALL to help you do that. So write A-L-L down the left-hand side, and here's where we're going to go today. The first one is this. The A is this. All people are made in the image of God. Every person on the planet is made in the image of God. You have to understand this truth to begin to recognize that every person matters to God. Because if you're like me, somewhere along the way, somebody frustrated you, somebody became a nemesis of yours, or even an enemy of yours, or somebody just did something, and you dismiss them as a person who doesn't matter. And part of the reason that you dismiss them was because of the pain that they caused you. And yet, what we're going to discover is that in the garden, in the very beginning of time, in the book of Genesis, the first chapter, there's actually a verse that's put inside of this to understand the importance that every person is made in God's image. You see, God did this incredible creation. He put together the mountains and the seas, and he put together all the living things of trees and plants, and he put all the animals together and all the fish in the sea and had all these incredible things. And in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, God says this. He says, he created human beings in his own image. You were created in the image of God. The Latin word that refers to the image of God is this word called imago Dei. Imago Dei is the Latin word that brings out this idea. And the concept of the image of God is an understanding that every single person, every person that has ever been born to this planet was made in the image of God. That God saw them and recognized them, male and female, and he made them in his image. Why? Because he knew that there was something different about you that separated you from plant life. There was something different about you that separated you from the animal kingdom. And the reality was there are three things that really separate us. And it wasn't an image thing like some of us think of looking in a mirror and you look and you say, oh, okay, so God looks like this. Wow, that's kind of scary. No, it's not that. It's the idea of understanding that you as a human being were made in the image of God. And therefore you get the privilege of thinking. You think on different levels than other individuals or other animals around the kingdom. You think in different levels. You have a complexity about you and your thinking that nobody else can get to. And even in your own thoughts, in your own minds, you think through things. You recognize math equations. You recognize how things fit together. You recognize putting things together. And that is the incredible, enormous aspect of the brain. You have been given a brain to think things through, and that is one of the best things about being part of the image of God. The other thing is this, is that every society, even societies who have yet to hear the gospel of Christ, one of the commonalities of every society, whenever somebody shows up and they begin to know these groups, is that every society under the sun has always had a sense of a moral compass. It is a right or a wrong. It may not be your rights or your wrongs, but they have a sense of a moral compass that if somebody goes against the moral of that society, then there is some kind of punishment that occurs. There's some kind of issue that happens inside of them. You have had that placed in your life because you are made in the image of God. Think about this. When he came together and put man together, he said, every man, every woman, every child is made in my image. David would put it this way in the Psalms, in the 139th Psalm. He would write this about you and me and every person of the 8 billion people on the planet. He would say, you made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. You are made in the image of God. You need to tell your neighbor that because they forgot it. So tell them you're made in the image of God. This is the imago Dei. It's scriptural truth. You see, not only are we made in the image of God mentally, and we're made in the image of God with a sense of a moral compass, but there's also the idea that we're made in the image of God socially. You and I have social interactions of how we work and the complexities of those social interactions. I discovered it a few weeks ago. I had a friend of mine that sent me an email, and in the email, they wrote out this incredible story of something that occurred in the course of their life, and so they wrote this awesome story, and then at the very end of the story, they were getting to the place where they were asking me something. They were saying, does this really happen? And so the answer to their question was a yes or no answer, and so after this like four-page email, and I read through the whole email, they asked the question, and so my response to them was a simple yes, and then a few days later, I ran into him, and I was like, hey, how's it going? I kind of got the cold shoulder, and I was like, what's this all about? And so I said, you know, hey, are you okay? And they're like, you know, look, I sent you a four-page email, and the best you could respond was yes. And I said, well, you asked the question at the end. I answered your question, and they read into the emotion of the answer, one-word answer, this idea. And why would they do that, even though all of us have been instructed somewhere along the way that emails are not for emotions? It's because you and I are socially complex. Every one of us are. That whatever it is that I say to you, it goes through a grid that is unique to you. And it's so unique to you because it goes back to your circumstances. It goes back to how you were raised. It goes back to the things that you were taught. It goes back to your environment. And when you begin to see and recognize and experience the fact that God made every man, woman, and child, 8 billion people on this planet in such a unique way, you get to see and experience the imago Dei of every man, woman, and child. But there's a problem. And the problem for you and I is the fact that while we're social, while we're moral, and while we have this mind inside of us, we tend to get in the way of other individuals. And so while this is a truth, and while Jesus establishes this truth, while God establishes it, David confirms it, the truth is you and I oftentimes do not treat every person we meet as if they were made in the image of God, do we? And so I want to give us a couple of ideas, a couple of thoughts of what Jesus had to say about how you can see people made in the image of God. And it's actually found in what's called the Sermon on the Mount. It is a scripture, it is an opportunity where Jesus stood. It's the longest sermon Jesus ever preached, and it's recorded in the Bible in the book of Matthew, the 5th chapter through the 7th chapter. And Jesus brought some ideas that for the next few moments, this is going to be a bit of a challenge for every one of us, including myself. And the L, if you're writing down some of the L's, wait a minute, I'll tell you what, before we get there, I want to show you a story. I want to show you a story about this idea of being made in the image of God. I almost forgot. And one of the cool things is last week when I was at the North Campus, I had the privilege of sitting right behind this individual and watching the things that God's doing and how they've come to the realization that when they see themselves made in the image of God, it changes the very course of how they live their life. Let's watch the screen together and see a story of my friend Tyson.
When I was younger in my life before Christ, I allowed myself to have labels applied upon me. Amongst those labels was a thief, a drug addict, and or a drug dealer. All these labels began to weigh me down, and over time, I believed them. I started to think that that's all there was, and that's the way it would always be, and maybe I didn't know any different. I think that a lot of this problem and issue that I continue to put myself through was my surroundings, the people, the places, the things. None of these people were telling me any different, other than my parents, who I chose not to listen to. These people, if nothing else, they glorified those labels, you know, the best drug dealer, the worst drug addict, you know, the worst thief, amongst things that, you know, not to be proud of, nothing that is something that you seek in your life or you look after. After the decision to change my life and give my life to the Lord or live for the Lord, the things that really helped me to change and mold me into a different person were the people that I began and or became connected with. These people were able to explain, show, and give me examples of reasons why my life does matter. And they were able to describe and or explain to me, help me get through situations time and time again without being high or without making money illegally or without taking advantage of someone in some kind of way. The labels that I would say now are applied to me are things like honest, hard worker, man of integrity. These things are labels that people look for, that they go after. And the difference between then and now is the labels that I try to receive now I'm proud of. And I know that my family's proud of. And I also know that these connected people that I talk to now and I deal with on a daily basis, weekly basis, they also are proud of me. And I know that and I can feel that. And it's a big difference when you begin to realize that your life matters too. One big thing that I've learned through all this change in my life and through the experiences that I have received lately is that there was many days in my life when I didn't believe that all people matter at all, to be honest. So there was a lot of times when, whether it was racism or any kind of anything that could have separated people from mattering, I lived that. I accepted that. And the truth is that people and or biblical people that I associate with and people that have helped me through this time have been able to explain and provide me examples of why people do matter. And I believe that everyone does matter. And I'm a completely different person because of it. On a daily basis, I give I will go through a situation, something will happen, and I will think, wow, you know, it's completely different. My life is completely different and changed for the better because of me understanding that everyone is a child of God and they all matter.
Imago Dei, all of us are made in the image of God. So why is it then there's a separation? And how do I deal with that separation? Jesus talked about this in the Sermon on the Mount, in which he would sit down and give a couple of ideas that were game changers, and they're going to be game changers for you if you're willing to listen to the words of Jesus today. And the first one is this. He says this, and the L, if you're writing down the L is simply this, for us to love my enemies. This is a tough one. Because for those of us in the room who have enemies, you know that there are people in your world who have wronged you. There are people in your world who cut to the very core of who you are. And this understanding and idea of loving our enemies becomes a very difficult situation for us. We struggle with this. But in Matthew chapter 5, these are the words that Jesus says in regards to this. He said, "You have heard the law that says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy." Now, I don't know about you, I like that law. Why did we change it? Because quite honestly, when somebody hurts me, when somebody gets to the place that they frustrate me and anger me, it's a good thing for me because my neighbor lives next door and I want to get along with my neighbor. But to be honest with you, if you wrong me, if you hurt me physically, emotionally, or spiritually, then the reality is this. I don't know if I want to hang out with you. I don't know if I want to be friends with you. Several years ago, I was in a conversation with a friend of mine, and in the course of the conversation, it became very heated because he and I disagreed about some very core issue in our lives. And as we began to talk about it, here we were in a coffee shop, and we're having this conversation, and then all of a sudden, the level of our conversation just got a little bit louder, a little bit louder, a little bit louder. And then I said to him, you know, hey, look, we're going to agree to disagree on this. I realize I want to get away from this guy as soon as I possibly can. And I said, so let's go. And so we stood out in the parking lot. And as we stood out in the parking lot, I said to him, you know, hey, man, have a good life, you know, that kind of stuff. And then as we're parting ways, he had to have the last word. And he knew me well enough as a friend to say the one thing that cut to the very core of who I was. And so what he did is he cut straight to the core in that moment. And I remember getting in the car, and I remember driving away, and I remember because it hurt, and it hurt bad, that I thought to myself, I never want to see him again. And some of you know this pain. And when Jesus would make this statement to the thousands of people who were there on the hillside with him, they would have said, yes, we like that law. And the reason that we like that law is because there are times in our lives where somebody says something or does something that cuts me to the core. And the truth of the matter is, the last thing I want is to be able to go after that person and say, hey, let's hug this one out because I don't want to hug it out. I'd rather throat punch it out, right? And some of us fall into the same category. And so then Jesus continues on and says, but I say, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. And then he continues on to talk a little bit further about it by saying, in that way, you'll be acting as the children of your Father in heaven, for he gives his sunlight both to the evil and to the good. He sends rain on the just and on the unjust alike. And then he concludes by saying these phrases. He says, if you love only those who love you, what reward is there for that? Even those who are corrupt tax collectors, even the worst of sinners do that much. If you're kind only to your friends, how are you different from anyone else? Even the pagans, even those who do not know who God is, do that. A few days after our conversation, I was reading through the Gospels, and in the book of Matthew, this came up. And I sensed God saying, Chris, you got to do something about this. And if you notice, the thing that he tells us to do in this process is how do I do this? How do I love my enemies? He says, pray. Pray for your enemies. And I got to confess to you, the very first day I went through my prayer, I got to the place where I was supposed to pray for this individual, and I was so angry, I was so furious, I was so hurt by what they said to me that I could not pray for them. I ended my prayer and I went on. Day 2 came along, and I couldn't pray for them. Day 3 came along, and I couldn't pray for them. And finally, after a couple of weeks, I finally was like, okay, well, I'm going to pray for them, but it's not going to be anything that I care about in my heart. I'm just going to mention them because, God, you told me to mention them. And so I mentioned their name, and then I said amen, and the prayer was over. And I did that for a few weeks. And then something began to occur in me. That this understanding of me praying for this individual who we disagreed on a core issue in the course of our life, this person made a choice to go in a direction that was opposite of the direction that I wanted to go. And yet, while we were still in that conversation, something occurred in me. God began to show me that this person, while it may seem that they're wrong, while it may seem even Scripture stands against the beliefs that they had, that God was reminding me that they were made in His image. And that they mattered to Him. So for you, who is it on your list that you know this week you need to pray about? Because if every person, according to Scripture, is made in the image of God, who is it that you need to pray about? And then the second thing for us to do, and it's going to get a little heavier, so turn to your neighbor and say, it'll be all right. This is getting tough. The second thing of the L's, the last L, is leave the judgment to God. Man, this is tough. Because I don't know about you, but oftentimes I find myself judging people even when I don't think I'm judging them. You ever do that? Where you don't know a person at all, but you're like in a restaurant or something, or you're at a grocery store and you see them across the way, and then all of a sudden you just kind of put two and two together and you're like, well, this happened, that happened. Look at this, look what they're doing, look at the kind of stuff they're buying at the grocery store. Obviously, they're this, right? There's this kind of judgment that occurs. And just a few verses later, just a few words after Jesus goes through this whole enemies thing, here's what he comes back at, and here's what he says. He says this in the seventh chapter of the book of Matthew. Same speech that he's giving here. The same thing. Here's what he says to us. Do not judge others, and you will not be judged. For you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. Wow. Man, this is a tough one for some of us. Because I think that for so many of us, we struggle with this idea. Mother Teresa puts it this way. She would say these words. She says, if you judge people, you have no time to love them. And it's true. You see, for some of us, we come to a place and we get to this idea that I am so interested, I am so frustrated because you make these choices in your life and you're choosing to live contrary to God. And some of us, in the idea of trying to defend God, and you need to understand, God does not need to be defended. He will take care of defending Himself. And for some of us, what happens is people are living lives contrary to what Scripture says, and you and I feel that it's our place to stand in that moment almost with a sense of arrogance and pride and to be able to say, look, here's what you're doing wrong. These are the things that are wrong in the course of your life, and you need to understand. Paul's very clear, and he mentions this a number of times in the New Testament, this idea and understanding that if you need to approach somebody about a lifestyle issue, if you need to approach somebody about a sin problem, that the idea to do it is with gentleness and love. And the problem is, you and I have this understanding to where we say, you know what? I can love this person, I can love this person, but this is where the line gets drawn. And if you make this mistake, then I am not going to love you. And you know what happens? We treat people like they're not part of the image of God. In college, when I was a student, the big thing that was happening in those days was there was an incredible thing about pro-life and pro-choice. That was the big deal. And there were these demonstrations that took place pretty regularly. I'm going to admit I'm pro-life. I want people to be born in this earth. I think God made every person in His image. But the problem that I discovered when I was there is that there are some people who are Christians who are so interested in keeping somebody from coming out of the keeping somebody and coming out of the womb, but they could care less for the people who are already out of the womb. And so this day I went to the city that was in Kentucky, and I was standing there outside of an abortion clinic, and there were two groups of people. There were the pro-life folks, and there was a street that divided us, and then there were the pro-choice people. And you can imagine the intensity of the moment. The media was there. There was this big show up kind of thing, and everybody was going along. People were driving by this street that normally had hardly anybody driving by it, and they were honking, and they were putting their fists out at one side, and some of them were giving obscene gestures to the other side. I mean, there was this intensity that was a part of it. And when I arrived, I noticed that people were holding up signs, and they were saying, "This is my sign, this is what I'm for." And then as I was standing there in the middle of the crowd, I noticed that people started throwing phrases back and forth at each other, and they were just yelling at each other, and there was nobody who was willing to listen to anybody else. There was just this intensity that was occurring in the moment. And I realized in my spirit that this just didn't feel right. And so I had the conviction that God was saying, "Chris, ask people if they need somebody to pray for them." And I said, "Okay." And so I was standing on the side of the pro-life area, and as I was standing there, I went up to some people, probably about 9-10 people, something like that, and I said, "Is there anything that I can pray for you about?" And I heard overwhelmingly with those 9-10 people, every single one of them say something along this line: "You pray that those people find Jesus." And I thought, how angry can we be? And then I snuck out of the back of the crowd, and I walked about 2 blocks out and 2 blocks around, and walked all the way around, and I came in at the pro-choice side, and I was standing there right in front of an abortion clinic, and I was having this conversation with the people in the pro-choice side. And the amazing thing that happened was I walked up probably not to as many, 7 or 8, and I asked them, "Is there anything that I can pray for you?" And the amazing thing that happened in that moment was every person that I asked had an incredibly personal prayer request that they wanted me to give. One lady was standing there with a sign held up, and she said, "Pray for my little girl. The doctors say she only has a few weeks left to live." There was another guy that said, "Pray for my mom. She's in the nursing home, and she's not doing well right now. And every time I go to see her, my heart breaks." And every person had a prayer request that was personal to them in that moment. And they allowed me to stop and even pray with them and to pause in the course of that. And I recognized something in that day. The thing that I recognized is that for most of us, including myself, the more I get into the world of justice, the less I tend to get into the world of love. And Jesus says, "I'll take care of the judgment." I recognize the Bible speaks of moral standards, but for some of us as Christians, we have written off individuals and we have said, "You are not part of the image of God because you choose a lifestyle that's contrary to mine, and you need to know that is against Scripture." We are called to love and to restore with gentleness. And today, as we do this, and as we recognize that every person's made in the image of God, and we begin to leave behind the judgments, and we begin to love our enemies, and things begin to change in us. But here's where I want to end this thing today, is if every person's made in the image of God, if every person matters to God, then can I say this to you? You matter to God. Ladies and gentlemen, some of us have believed the labels that people put on us. And like my friend Tyson a few minutes ago, you're living those labels out right now. And you believe in those labels that somebody said you're this. And maybe it was because of who your parents were. Maybe it's because of a mistake that you made back in school years ago. Maybe it's because of somebody that you were associated with. Maybe it's because of who your family is or what they look like. Maybe it's because of the people who are around you. And so you have accepted a label that isn't you. And I want you to hear this today. Every person in every part of every campus, whether you're online, whether you're in North Kokomo, or whether you're sitting in this room, you need need to know this. You matter to God. You want to know how much you matter to God? Luke 15. Listen to what happens in Luke 15. It says this. Tax collectors and other notorious sinners often came to listen to Jesus teach. And this made the religious folks, the Pharisees and the teachers of the religious law, complain that he was associating with such sinful people. He was even eating meals with them. And so here's what Jesus does in this moment and in the response of this. Can you imagine? I mean, you've got the religious people, the people that are respected in the area, and then you've got all of these folks over here that everybody would say they're the riffraff or whatever you want to call them, and they're all standing around, and here they are going, Jesus, you claim to be a religious person. You claim to be a teacher. You claim to be a teacher of the law, and yet you hang out with people who are far from God. And here's what Jesus has to say about this. He says this, let me tell you a story. I love how he does this. This is one of my favorite chapters of the Bible. Because I remember reading this chapter and thinking to myself, my labels don't matter. Let me just tell you the story. It says, he told him a story. He said, a man has 100 sheep and one of them gets lost. What'll he do? Won't he leave the 99 others in the wilderness and go search for the one that's lost until he finds it? He continues on to say this. He says, and when he's found it, he'll joyfully carry it home on his shoulders. And when he arrives, he'll call together his friends and neighbors saying, rejoice with me. I found my lost sheep. And then Jesus concludes this story by saying this. In the same way, there is more joy in heaven over one lost sinner who repents and returns to God than over 99 others who are righteous and haven't strayed away. You matter to God. Ladies and gentlemen, he will do whatever he has to do to find you. He will chase after you. He will find you in the darkest of places. You can decide for yourself how far you want to run, and you can run and run and run, and he will find you. Why? Because he loves you unconditionally. You matter to God. He doesn't end the story there. He tells another story about a woman who has 10 silver coins, and she loses one, and he says, she'll light a lamp, sweep the entire house. She'll search carefully until she finds it. I know what this is like because several years ago when I was in college, a friend of ours thought that on the Monopoly game, he won $1 million from McDonald's. Remember those things? He had found the one piece. And so he got this piece and he's like, oh my gosh. And so he was hearing from others and they're like, hey, here's the one. Nobody ever gets to this boardwalk thing, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I had it. I know I had it. And so he sits us down. He convinces us that he has it. And of course, we're pretty shrewd, right? So what do? We're like, okay, so how much is in it for me when I help you find this, right? And so there's like three of us that are like, oh, okay, here's the deal. And so we tear off to go find it. And about midnight, we're in his room and we're taking everything out of his dorm room. We are going through every sock, we're going through everything, and this guy was a slob, and we're walking through everything in his room. We take his bed, and we take it out, and we put it in the hallway, because we want to find the winning ticket, and we don't find it. And he says, I know where it is, it's in my car. 2 a.m, we head to his car. I mean, it's the middle of the night. We sneak out of the dorm, and there we are, and we're like, and this guy, I mean, I don't know, but for some reason, he ate McDonald's every meal of his life because he has a whole back seat just filled with Big Mac boxes and everything else, and we're like opening them up, and you're like, ooh, that's got like 9-year-old lettuce in it and stuff, and so we're like throwing these things out. We go through everything in his car, and we don't find it, and we look around, and he disappeared, and then we like, where'd he go? And then he comes back, and guess what he has? He has got a toolbox now. He is going to take the seats out so that we can find this. And so we are sitting there cranking the seats out of this guy's Pinto, and we are literally placing them outside, and we don't find it. And then he says, I heard that there's a gap in the floor. And so what do? We rip all the carpet out of this guy's Pinto. And so now we are bare. I have seen the bottom of a Pinto, ladies and gentlemen. And we never found it. So what we did, about 4 o'clock in the morning, two of us just went to bed. We left it there. We're like, here, buddy, you can put all this stuff back together. But listen to this, the rest of the story. When she finds it, she'll call her friends and her neighbors. And she'll say, rejoice with me because I found my lost coin. And then she concludes by saying this. In the same way, there's joy in the presence of God's angels when even one sinner repents. Ladies and gentlemen, know this. The labels that they have put on you are not you. If you look beside me here in the front, you'll see signs that says matters to God. And the reason that you were given one of these little labels here is because I'd like for you to take a pen eventually from the seat back in front of you and write your name on it. Because I want you to know you matter to God. And the truth of the matter is this: He will chase you down. He will walk with you. He will look wherever He has to find you. He will go to the darkest corners of this community. He will go to the farthest reaches of the earth, and He will search after you. Why? Because you matter to Him. He loves you that much. God loved you so much that He gave His only Son, and He'll search for you, and He'll look for you, and He'll do whatever He has to do in your life. He'll move you in ways that you never thought you could be moved. You will be hurt in ways that you never thought you could hurt, but you can always turn to Him. You know why? Because you matter to Him. It doesn't matter what you did last night. It doesn't matter what you did 10 minutes ago. It doesn't matter what you did 20 years ago. The truth of the matter is you matter to God. He loves you. He wants to be with you. He wants a relationship, and you can say your name, and you can say my name matters to God, because He matters. He matters. He matters. He loves you unconditionally, ladies and gentlemen. Here's how we're going to close this service out. We have a song that our guys had written. It's on their album that we want to sing over you. I'm not going to have you stand up in this moment. Matter of fact, here's what I'm going to have you do. The band's going to come out, and what they're going to do is they're going to sing this song, and you and God have a conversation. And maybe it's time for you to just eliminate the tags that have been put on your life. Maybe it's time for you to just say, these are no longer true, and I want you to write the name you were given on this tag, because you need to understand that you matter to God. That He loves you. And He'll move whatever He has to move for you to know that. And it saddens me how people will go through their life and they will put everything they have and spend their entire lives in things that matter not to Him. Only in the end, when death occurs, to try to find those things that matter the most. And today, I don't want anyone to go home not knowing that you matter. So here's what's going to happen. These guys are going to sing a song. And as they sing this song over you, you just stay in your seat. You and God have a little bit of a conversation listening to this song. And when you recognize that that moment is true for you, then I want you to put your name on this. And then you just walk up here and you put it on the sign that's in front of you. And then take a 1 second pause and just look at it and see your name. Because you matter. Because some of you were told as a kid that you didn't matter. Some of you were told that you were a mistake. Some of you have been told that you don't matter because of what it is that you've done wrong. But you need to know this: that's not how God sees you. And that's not how God created you. He created you in His image, and He loves you unconditionally, and you matter to Him. And so regardless of what your past looks like, regardless of the things that you struggle with, regardless of the mistakes that you've made, please hear this: you matter to God. You may not matter to the person who sleeps next to you at night. You may not matter to the people who call you family. You may not matter to your employer. And you may not matter to anyone else, even in the government. You may be seen as just a number. But in this moment, God knows your name. And you matter to Him. Let that sink in. Jesus, I thank You that several years ago, in the middle of my life, and the disappointments and the mistakes that I made, that God, Luke 15 spoke to me because you reminded me in that moment that you would have searched any mountain, you would have gone through any sea, you would have gone through any lengths to find me. And God, you reminded me that Chris Duncan matters to you. And Lord, I've got some friends right now in the room who are asking this question. Do I matter? Am I really made in the image of God? Because the world tells me different, maybe even the church tells me different, but for every person in this room to know, God, remind them that they matter to you. And so, Lord, let this be a moment for each of us. Maybe for some, for the very first time, to know that we've walked through a journey of life and today we come to the conclusion that we matter to you. Lord, remind us that we are mattering, that we matter to you, Jesus. Thank you for that.